Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we are going to do an Ask Drew topic, which I am excited for. And so I think this is going to be a fun one. So, Rochelle, what would you like to ask today?
So one of my favorite things that I tried to forget from old days is command line, Drew. And command line is almost as old as you are. So what do you know about command line?
Oh, I'm so happy to hear about and talk about the command line, because I feel like that is the one of the few things that I think I would consider myself an expert at command line. I love command line. Command line is amazing. So command line is your usual way of interacting with a computer, if you're on Windows or a Mac, is through a GUI or a graphical user interface, which means you have these nice windows. You have a mouse that you can point at the windows and click on things. You can move those windows around. You've got layers of the windows. You have this very rich, like, desktop environment, right? Like, that's how most people interact with computers. So in addition to that really nice graphical user interface, all OSs, there's no OS that I can think of that does not have a command line interface. And a command line interface is not graphical for the most part. It is just a text-based program that you type things into, and in return, you get additional text out of. Which, like, I always equate it to one of my favorite movies, I think, which is The Matrix, where you see the people doing programming, and there's all these green lines of characters flowing through, and they're just ones and zeros, but the characters are like, oh, you know, you see ones and zeros, I see a person here, a person there, something else there. And really, like, I think that's a very accurate depiction of what the command line is for most people. You see just people typing out words. They can usually type them really fast if they have been using the command line for a long time, and they're getting output back.
So sometimes, let me interrupt you. So it's not that simple. So you have to go to terminal. So if you go back a little further, again, like I said, it's older than you, DOS. So DOS, go back in the day, you had to get to terminal somehow or another, you know, and if you weren't that smart, and I raised my hand, I wasn't that smart, you go to DOS, find DOS and find a terminal. Mm-hmm. So it's true in both the Windows and the Mac environment, you have to find terminal to start typing all these wonderful commands. So yes. Can you talk to us a little bit about terminal?
Yes. So originally, in the early days of computers, you had a computer, and then you had a card in that computer, which they called a serial line adapter. And it was just like, it looks sort of like the an older adapter that you would put plug into your computer from a monitor. It has like 8 or 12 pins in it. It's pretty hefty. You would plug one end of a serial cable into your computer, and then you would plug the other end into something that had a monitor and a keyboard, and then you could interact directly with the computer's command line interface through that serial terminal. That's really clunky, right? Because who wants to have to go find a cable, plug it in, and do all of that work? So what they ended up with was what they call terminal emulators. So a terminal emulator is an app that you can run on any computer. I mean, there's terminal emulators for everything, and they probably come with your OS. Like, you probably don't even have to go out and install it. But a terminal emulator is a piece of software that you can bring up, and that will launch a command line interface just like any other app. Like my daily setup, I have one window that is, you know, Firefox, one window that is Outlook, and then one window that is just my terminal emulator that has all of my command line stuff that I can just love it. I can do almost everything in there. I could spend all day in this command line interface. It's great. And then along with that came protocols. So originally, the way you would connect to a remote terminal via software was a piece of software called Telnet, which it was a client server system. A server would run Telnet, a server would run a Telnet server, and a client would just run a Telnet client. And you would say, connect my computer to this other computer over here. And then without any authentication, sometimes Telnet had authentication, it would just connect and you could start running commands. That was replaced with, in the Unix world, it was replaced with SSH, which is a more secure way of doing that. Everything is encrypted, which means people can't snoop on the traffic like they could in Telnet. And all of the, it has authentication built in. So by default, you cannot connect without entering a username and password, which became very important early on in the internet when they realized, oh, there's bad actors. We need to do things securely instead of just trusting everyone that has a physical connection to your computer. And what I like about that is I can run SSH on my home computers and then connect to them anywhere I have a little piece of terminal emulator software, you know, so I can get on, say, my parents' computer or a computer that I don't own or a computer somewhere else. And I can always SSH into my home network securely. I wouldn't say that I would do that on a totally untrusted computer, but if it's somebody that I know, I could definitely do that. And it makes it really nice. I've immediately got access to all of my home stuff. I can copy files in and out. I can reboot things if I need to. It just makes for a really nice, easy experience versus having to set up like a giant VPN and do all this extra routing to get into your home network.
That's wonderful. So we have come a long way from where we used to be. These things used to be onerous, as I was telling you earlier, you know, like, so back in the early days of terminal and all those things, so you had to be exact, right? So if you made a mistake, you would get an error in running your code, right? So if you're writing, you know, some shell command or something to run, you had to have that code exactly right, or it would not run or give you an error if you ran it. What's really interesting in Linux or on a Mac when you did it, it would tell you what your error was and suggest ways you could correct it. So say your period was in the wrong place or your slash was unacceptable or something like that. We have come a long way. It's much better now. It's much more user-friendly. So we've talked a little bit about what command line is, but exactly what is the basic of command line interface, or what exactly are the basics of this? So are there specific syntax that you have to use, or you know, where would you go if you were basically new to command line interfaces?
So that's a great question. And I'm not exactly sure what the best place to be, the best new place to go would be. I would say open up your terminal app, whether it's in, if you're in the Windows world, you can just run, I think it's just called cmd.exe, and that will give you a terminal. Also, there's a built-in PowerShell terminal, which you can run and start exploring. In the Linux world, they all have terminals built in. Same with Mac OS. There's a really good one on Mac called iTerm2. Which I don't know whatever happened to iTerm 1, but iTerm 2 is great. And what happens when you run one of those under the covers is that it is launching your user's shell. And this is where the syntax gets tricky. Probably the most popular shell nowadays is a shell called, and let's talk about what a shell is. A shell is your interface into the operating system's hardware. And when you think like, well, why would I care about my operating system's hardware, right? Like, I don't necessarily care about the graphics card or, you know, the fans. Like, what does hardware have to do with it? Hardware is also input and output. So if you are reading text out of a terminal, you're interacting with the kernel because the kernel is, you know, under the covers actually doing all of this text back to you. So the shell gives you this easy way to interact with the kernel. So instead of having to write C programs or C++ programs or like really advanced types of things, you can use a shell, which will give you easy access to like pretty much any function you would want to use to interact with your operating system's kernel. There's a bunch of them. Bash was probably the most popular a few years ago. It's great. It's still in use everywhere. It's still like the default for a lot of things. There's one called ZSH, which is, I would consider that a little bit better version of Bash. It's still very similar to Bash, but has a few extra features like auto completion. So Rochelle, when you were talking about, you've got to type things in very specifically into your terminal emulator. That's because if you type the wrong thing, something really bad can happen. And the example I always like to give people is early in my career, I was working with another guy. We were both really new. He wanted to delete a file that began with a question mark. So a question mark is a special character in Bash or pretty much any shell that means match any letter or match any one character. So if you were to say, I want to look at all of my files, but I only want to see files that end in dot letter, 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 you could say ls dot question mark, question mark, question mark, and that would list out anything that was, say, dot txt or dot gif or dot png. So because that's a special character, you have to escape it when you are removing it. And so my coworker was like, oh, how do I delete this file? And I was like, oh, it's real easy. You just type rm, which means remove, space rf. Those are flags that say recursively remove it because it was a directory, and forcibly remove it because I don't want to say yes all the time. And then I said, do a backslash question mark star, which would match the file that began with a question mark or the folder. Star means match anything. So he says, got it, started running it. And then a few minutes later, he said, Drew, how long should this command take? Like, it's been like 5 minutes and my file is still here. I was like, oh, well, that shouldn't take like any time at all. It should take, you know, seconds or maybe a minute at most if there was a lot of stuff in there. So I went over to his computer and I saw that he had typed rm space dash rf forward slash question mark star, which, very simple mistake, right? We're talking about a backslash versus a forward slash. I'm not even sure if our listeners even know that there is a difference between a backslash and a forward slash. Yep. A backslash looks like a person leaning backwards. It goes from the like top left hand of a square to the bottom right hand of a square. And a forward slash is the opposite. It looks like a person leaning forwards, where it goes from the bottom left to the top right. And just with that one mistake, what he ended up doing was removing every file on his computer until the computer eventually froze and could not do anything else. And so that's just sort of an example of like a very small but important mistake that you can make when you are interacting with the shell.
Great.
So in the, I guess it was probably the midlife of shells, they started doing auto completion. So you can do double tab, which just means press the tab a couple times, and the shell will try and guess what you're trying to type. And that really makes things fast, because then you don't have to even type a full command. You could type, let's say you had a program called startpodcast.sh. You can just type st, hit tab tab, and that's going to show you every program that starts with the letters S and T. If there's only one program that starts with S and T, it's going to complete all the other letters out for you, and then you can just run it. I found myself using that tab tab on almost every command I run. It gives me like a nice instant feedback of, hey, does this command actually exist? And if it does, my tab completion is going to work. You can also do that for command line arguments. So the RM RF that we were talking about, if instead I would have said, do RM RF, if I had to go back in time, I probably would not have recommended this at all, because I wouldn't have expected the slashes to get fixed. But I could have said, then hit tab tab, and then, you know, select which thing you want to delete out of the dropdown, and that would work as well. So like auto completion has been, I feel like it's been a real game changer for shells, and it's worked out really, really nicely.
Well, I will say one thing for your friend who had typed the wrong command. There is the escape key, and you can hit the escape key repeatedly to, if it's not responding to you, because a lot of times, again, I raise my hand, you know, early days of programming, I wasn't that smart and I didn't have anybody to show me how. So I was learning on my own, you know, and I made lots of mistakes, you know, and what I would figure out is, you know, if you had something that was running and it was taking an abnormally long period of time, something is going wrong, because typically when you type in these keys, they're pretty responsive one way or the other, either telling you've got an error or doing what you asked it to do. If you hit the escape key, it'll start, or you can pre-code hotkeys that will respond for you one way or the other. I mean, it's a learning key. And for those of you who are interested, what Drew said, you know, you can go in and experiment with Terminal. If you look on a Mac, and I use a Mac almost exclusively now, at the top right of your corner, you'll see there's an hourglass. If you go and hit that hourglass, you can type in the word Terminal, and it'll bring up all the different Terminal apps that you have. You know, they're also BB edits or all kinds of other things you can learn. So I would say experiment. You know, again, you know, don't delete your operating system because there are things that are there. You know, I won't say this out loud, but you know, their target, you know, there's the word target allow you to copy your operating system to another, you know, there, you know, experiment with simple things before you go to the big things if you're not comfortable with that. But you move on to command line, you know, and all that stuff. You know, can you expand on why you would use command line? And, you know, what are the instances that you use command line? And, you know, are there, you know, I know you talked about, you know, you can do shortcuts, like you're talking about double tab and all that stuff, but what are instances that you use command line and how has it been helpful for you?
So there are a few, I'll give you an example of some of my favorite command line things that I run very often. So part of my workflow when working on code is we use a tool called Git, which is used for version management. And what I do with Git is I will make changes to code, commit the code, which means I'm going to say, yes, this code looks good. And then I'm going to run another command to push it to a remote server. And then I'm going to run a fourth command that waits for my CI/CD process to finish. So if I'm building a piece of software, my step is I'm going to edit the code, I'm going to push it to my build system, and I'm going to wait for the build system to complete. When I would do that the first few times, I would run all of those commands individually, and then I would go to a Firefox window for the last command to watch that complete. Well, that got really, I would say, I got bored of that very quickly because I was doing it so often. So what I ended up doing is combining a lot of those commands. The shell allows you to, let's say I'm going to combine my git commit and my git push and maybe a git tag in there. So all of those three commands are exactly the same every time I run them. So when I want to do that, I can just literally press the up arrow and those three commands are going to pop up and I hit enter and then it does everything that I want it to do, excluding the last step, which was waiting on this GUI for a process to finish. What I ended up doing was I really hated switching over to the GUI out of my terminal from this little process. So I wrote another script that will do the wait for me. And that's what I really liked. So now I can say change code, commit code, push code, wait for code to be done, and then ding, right? Then make like an audio sound on the computer so that I know that it's done. And that's what I do now. Like whenever I need to push a piece of code, I can type, there's another shell shortcut called Control R, where you press the Control key and the R key, and it will search through your history and pretty much bring up a set of commands that you have run in the past. So I had to handcraft that once. And then after that, I just hit Control R, type Git, and it shows up. I can pick it, run it. It takes me like less than 2 seconds, I would say, to do that entire process versus having to run each command individually and then just sort of wait. The problem with running each of those commands individually, in addition to it being annoying, is that people get distracted, right? So I run one command, somebody pings me on something, I go talk to them, and then I forget to run the second command because I'm a human, right? Like my context switching is not great So being able to do all of those commands in one line makes things very, very efficient if you're using a terminal.
Is this on a Mac or is this on Windows, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter. I do it on a Mac. All of my primary everyday workstations are Macs, but you could also do it on a Windows computer or a Linux computer. The Mac and Linux shells are very, very similar. Like, they're both going to be running either Bash or ZSH. I think Mac recently switched to default to ZSH, but I don't think Linux has yet. In the Windows world, it's a little bit different. There are a lot of similarities to the Windows shell and Bash, but they are not 100% compatible. So you can't just run any Bash script on a Windows host. You may be able to run a couple Bash commands, but it's only a couple. It's a very small subset. PowerShell got much better for using a terminal emulator or a shell inside of Windows. Like, I think PowerShell, I would say that's better than both Bash and ZSH now. Like, PowerShell is really nice. I don't think it's as good as some of the newer shells. Like, there's one we haven't talked about yet, but my daily shell now is a shell called Fish, F-I-S-H. And it has it's just out of the box, has lots of cool built-in features that I really like. There's another one, I think it's called Elvish. And what it does is, instead of doing, when you do that tab, you usually see a list of options directly in the terminal. But in I think it's Elvish. I might be wrong on that. But one of these newer ones, it'll actually bring up like a drop down of things, like something that looks much more like a GUI. And a lot of people really like that as well. When I tried that one, it slowed me down. Like, everything just had like a little bit too much of a lag. So I switched back to the Fish shell. But I think both are great.
Well, that's wonderful. So they are making progress in this. And it seems like to me that developers for operating systems are developing tools to make it easier for you to code and develop your own resources.
Yep.
But let me ask you this question. So we're talking about developing applications and operating systems like, you know, Linux and Windows and Mac. But where does this stuff stand when you are outsourcing your things like to Amazon or Google, mm-hmm. or the cloud? Can you use command line and scripting in those kinds of environments?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you can use them in many ways. And I would say probably like more ways than you can a local computer. So there are a couple ways you can do it. You can interact with things like AWS and Azure and Google Compute using command line tools from your computer. And because the cloud is built on top of APIs, which are application programming interfaces, which I think we've talked about before, but it's a way to interact securely with the remote computer system. So there, I think for Amazon, it's just called AWS. Azure has one called AZ. And they're just these tiny little command line applications that you can use. And it can talk to the cloud and spin up hosts, take down hosts, do whatever you want. In addition to that, at least Azure and Google, I'm not 100% sure about AWS, but I have a feeling they probably have this as well, is they have a thing which is called a cloud shell. So in the cloud shell, you go to Azure or Google Compute or maybe AWS, and there's a little button you can click called Give Me a Cloud Shell. And within your web browser, it'll bring up a little terminal emulator that is already authenticated to all of your stuff, and you can run all of the commands that you could have from your local box directly in the cloud without having to do that remote connection. And I feel like that's sort of an undersold aspect of using the cloud, is like, yeah, there's this little thing that you just get for free, which lets you interact as if, you know, you're in a local terminal, but it's on your, you know, whatever cloud that you happen to use. And it's a really cool way of interacting with cloud resources.
That's wonderful. So with the advent of new interfaces, is it possible that we'll see new changes to command line? That you talked about fish a little bit, but will we see this be more user-friendly? I mean, I still think that, you know, we talk a lot about programming and coding, and you are the king of coding. We already acknowledge that, you know, everything there is to know about coding. But will we see this become a simpler interface? Will we see it become, you know, you're having a problem. So we talked about this a while ago, like, you know, hello became, you know, easy. You know, you could type hello, write code just to make the computer say hello to you. And back in the day, we could make the computer say hello to us every morning. So you come in, pop up, the first thing your computer says is hello or good morning. Uh-huh. So is it possible that we will see these tools where you don't have to go to a terminal, but they're just right there, like in the Mac, you know, you have all these, you know, icons at the bottom of the side of your screen that you could just go in, but will we see it? So like, just let's just say you have a problem and the app didn't do all the things you wanted to do. So you can go in into your mm-hmm. little edit and your terminal, whatever it is, and say, why didn't this run? Or what was the problem? Or did we get the output we were hoping for? Is it possible that will come to fruition at some point?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think we're in the middle of that right now. Like, thinking specifically about editing code, like most code editors now have a terminal emulator built into them. So like, I use VS Code a lot, and VS Code is not a terminal app. It's a text editor and, you know, a programming helper, but it has a terminal built into it. So underneath the code that you're programming, you can have a full shell and run it all from the same window. In addition to that, there are a lot of people that are just making better command line tools now. There's a term that I had not heard of until, I guess, fairly recently. So we all know what GUI is, which is graphical user interface. There's also TUI, T-U-I, which is terminal user interface. And people have started making that more of, I would call it more of an art. In the olden days, and I say olden as in like probably 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, which is a long time for computer technology. While I love the terminal, using the terminal was super ugly. There was not much thought given to UX. UX means user experience, which is like, how easy is it to interact with a terminal utility? So I would say like the rm command has a very bad user experience, because based on my story earlier, it is very easy to delete your entire computer with the rm command. So what people have done, and I'll shout out this company specifically, which I think they're called Charm, or their website is charm.sh. They have started building, their logo is make the command line glamorous again, and they've started adding in like colors and style sheets and, you know, spacing, all these ways to make your terminal, all these ways to develop terminal applications that don't look like garbage. And that's like a real key. I even think about things like emojis. I feel like emojis have made a great use in the terminal world. Are you familiar with emojis, Rochelle?
Oh my God, don't start. I haven't made it to the 23rd century of young people, but you know, I'm able to put a heart emoji when my children send me something, you mm-hmm. know, you know, I'm able to, so let's just say, yes, I know a few of them. I haven't gotten past the first page of emojis. There are hundreds of pages, you know. Oh, yeah. I also know that you can make yourself a color. You know, mm-hmm. so I'm still pale, whatever that might mean. So I haven't been brown yet, but I'm working on it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, you know, but it is what it is.
So for the folks that don't know, emoji, we'll jump back in time again. You remember colon, close bracket was the signal for like a smiling face in the olden days of the internet, because it looks like a head turned sideways, the colon is the two eyes, and then the closed parenthesis is the mouth. Semicolon looks like it's winking. Like, they're very primitive, but they were a way to use emotion over a text medium, like instant messaging or SMS. So what ended up happening was the Unicode Foundation made those a more formal thing. And they said, you know what? Instead of like these sort of junky text-based faces that look like they're, you know, a sideways head that's smiling or winking, let's just make a little circle with an emoji on there. Or, well, it's called an emoji, but it'll be a circle. It actually looks like a face versus having to guess that it's a face based off of text. But they have it for much more than just faces. There are like, you know, simple things like circles that you can do, or lights, or foreign letters. There's just a ton of ways that you can print to the terminal. And all of the terminals support these Unicode things now. So that, like, while it feels like a small thing to me, or while it feels like a small thing, I think it also makes for a really great user experience when you can see, I won't say just like a smiling face at the end of your program, but you can use these to, you know, highlight parts of the command line that you otherwise may not have been able to see. Like, I sort of like using, there's one program that I use where it launches something that has three stages. So we'll say like, the first stage I'm going to represent with an egg. The second stage is a chicken busting out of that egg. And then the third stage is like a full grown chicken. And it gives you an easy way to see like, hey, where am I in this process? Am I still the egg? Am I a hatchling, or am I a full grown chicken? And I don't know. I've really enjoyed little things like that that just add like a little bit of flair and glamour to a very non-glamorous thing like the terminal and shells.
Yeah. You know, I think that it's amazing where technology is going. My husband said, I am the prognosticator of negative news about technology. But, you know, just hearing about command line, you know, and I never really call it command line. I just call it using terminals, you know, to get things done. But, you know, for young people, I do think that there is a great possibility to learn technology without, you know, being a true technologist, because I mean, like command line, you know, like you can, like, for example, you know, I was trying to, the federal government, so I trademarked a logo not too long ago, and they sent it to me as a PDF text file. I'd never heard of a PDF text file.
I've never heard of that either.
I couldn't open it. And the app that they sent me to open with, I couldn't find it in the Apple store. I couldn't find it anywhere. So the text file, it looked like gibberish, you know, but I downloaded it, you know, and I could find in the text file what I was looking for. So I used Terminal. I copied the entire file into Terminal, and it converted it into something that I could read, you know, nice. So I could see my content in, you know, and again, you know, I say this, give my normal caveat. I have not been a programmer since maybe the early 90s. And you can imagine how far technology had come from there. You know, I was programming in CICS, or we called it KICS at the time, IMS, you know, Fortran, Assembler, COBOL. You know, those were the languages that I used. You know, what was that machine called? There was this little, I can't think of it, but it's this little computer that it ran all financial applications of it. Every once in a while, you see one in an organization. Now, somebody had done some consulting with, they had one not too long ago. And I'm like, God, I thought this had gone away. Dinosaur, yeah. Believe it or not, people still have them. You know, so at the end of the day, you know, that anybody can get into this field, and there is a need. You know, I was really shocked to see people were laid off in technology fields, but those are companies that were fat to begin with. You know, they already had too many people in these jobs, but there's still a tremendous need in technology fields. You know, there is some concern that AI will eventually displace us, but you know, that's a ways off, you know? So the fact that you're talking about, you know, command line and using, you know, these new programming tools that are coming online is really reassuring that there is an opportunity out there. And, you know, Drew, I say this again, you know, I really do think, you know, you should have your second side hustle, you know, teaching people these things. I think, you know, because the way you talk about it is really, you know, it's not challenging, it's not dense, you know, sounds really simple. You know, you could teach me how to write a program, you know, and if you could teach an old person like me, you could teach anybody, you know? So I do think that there is you know, a market for this, and there's opportunities for people to learn this. So I'm really glad we were able to talk about command line. And I do think there are other things like, you know, PowerShell. Where mm-hmm. has PowerShell gone? Where has C++ or C gone just in general? You know, yeah. where Python, you know, I do think there's more talk about Python, but Git has taken the place of some of these things, you know, these self-contained things like GitHub and GitLab and all these things have just kind of displaced some of these things, but there's still room for them, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's room for those old, the programs you were talking about just a little while ago, like Fortran. Like, I see Fortran installed, I won't say on a daily basis, but I mean, it comes up once a year or so. We hear about it, and like, there's still things that need all that. Like, it is very easy to bring up new technologies, and it's very hard to get rid of old technologies. So, in technology, I feel like we never throw anything away. Like, all of that stays around for a really long time, and there's always for the foreseeable future, there's always going to be a need for people to know how to handle that stuff.
Somebody sent me a job opening for a systems programmer, mm-hmm. you know, and so a systems programmer back in the day was an IBM mainframe programmer. It was someone who knew how to develop the IBM 360, 370 mainframe programmer. Today, that's a person who knows how to develop, what is it, it's a data analyst who knows how to connect data cells together to make data cells work together. So you've got, let's just say you've got a data cell over here that contains all of the data of someone's or the hiring you've done versus all the payroll things over here and connect those cells together. You know, mm-hmm. so those things, I guess they do stick around. The question is, are there IBM mainframes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I think there are. I mean, I think there still are a lot of those things. They're definitely less now. Like, I don't want to say that they're huge, but they do still exist. And like, when we think about like data analytics, like those pipelines are a huge deal, right? Like, I want to get data from, you know, this system over here, and then I want to combine it with this other system over there, and then I want to remove these 30 things, and then I want to compress it, and then I want to do this and this and this and this and this. And there's like, there's a lot of steps to go into that. And that's like a pretty big career path right now.
Yeah, I can believe so. But I mean, I just can't believe anybody can afford. I mean, back in the 70s, an IBM mainframe was $1 million a month. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who can afford that today? I mean, it was between buildings. You know, you had the mainframe in one building, the data in another building, the rest of the peripherals in another building, and the air conditioning building in and of itself. I can't. Well, it must be a pretty big company that can afford it. That's what I'll say. But
well, now it's like the cloud. Like, there are lots of companies, lots of, I would say, smaller companies that have $1 million cloud bills every month. Like, that's, you know, it's still cheaper than having your own data center in a lot of ways. And like, you don't have to be Google to have $1 million cloud bill a month. Like, there are tons of probably startups even have like those really expensive hosting bills. Like, it's, cloud can be expensive, but it is usually cheaper than running your own data center.
I can imagine. I don't doubt it, but I'm sure we're at time. This is really nice to walk down memory lane and end up in the future.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you to all of our listeners for listening today. If you have questions or just want to send us an email, shoot it to imminentteachnology@gmail.com, and we will talk to you all soon.